afternoon. I was fixing to say good morning, Vietnam. No. A little different temperature out there from Vietnam today. Any of you got up around 6 o'clock to let your dog out, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And my back porch is a tile porch, and it will numb your feet right now. It's just stuff just keeps that cold in. And woof. Hey, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Roger Metz. We'll be with you for the next hour on 94.5 WGTK, The Answer in Greenville. I got a good friend of mine and fellow Outdoor Press Association guy, Jim Mize, in the studio with me today.
Great to be here.
Man, we're going to have fun. We're going to talk about books. Jim's a writer, got a couple of books out, even brought us a couple to give away. So we'll do that in a little bit. But, you really get to meet a lot of interesting people in this. And Jim's been in it since 1977.
Yes.
A while. I've been in it less than three. So, but and we had a lunch the other day and had a really good time getting to know each other more. We see each other at conventions and talk through emails and all, but it's been good getting to know him a little more. And he actually sent me an email and said, hey, I got an offer on some books for, and we'll talk about that. But I said, well, you brought it up. Why don't you come in and let's talk books? So we're going to talk writing after a while.
Super.
Yeah, it'd be good. The calendar, I'm waiting on somebody to call in for a short calendar, and he may or may not. I haven't gotten a response back. But anyway, if you're not keeping up with politics in Washington, if you're kind of taking a checked out until January 20th when we have a new president, there's some industry news out there, which is like Jim and I were talking earlier, is, you know, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is the Outdoor Rec Act passed. And what that means is the government has to track and report in all the labor statistics and all that, and the Commerce Department, Bureau of Economic Analysis, have to report the impact of outdoor industry in the United States. And it's pretty big. $646 billion per year of the U.S. domestic gross product is from the outdoor rec industry, which is hunting, fishing, boating, I guess, mountain biking, camping. What else am I missing?
Bird watching.
Yeah. Bring up bird watching. Now, there's a good, okay, this is a rabbit trail. Bear with me. What, from an outdoorsman or pretty much anybody in bird watching, one thing, binoculars. Staple? I mean, you got to have a pair.
That's right.
Several pair.
Yep.
And if you're not a hunter, you think, well, why do I need a pair of binoculars? Well, it just brings life up close. When I deer hunt, I use my binoculars. I never use a scope to see what I'm shooting at. But always use the binoculars, and more times than not, I'm so caught up in watching something else. Right now in the woods with all the leaves off the trees, man, you can see every bird, every squirrel, and it's a visual. Sometimes it's hard to keep track of, and I find myself losing sight of, I'm out here deer hunting and not out here to watch the bird or the chipmunk or the squirrel or whatever. You ever get that?
Oh, yeah. They're always in the same tree with me.
Yeah.
You know, you start to wonder what else is going to climb up there with you.
There's those videos out there with a bear climbing the tree.
That's right.
What would you do?
I would hope he would climb back down. I don't know that I would move.
Okay. Oh, me. But anyway, yeah, $646 billion per year to the U.S. GDP, 4%. That's according to the American Sports Fishing Association. Our industry is about opportunities, improving the quality of life for Americans, and it's absolutely about jobs, business, and economy. The bill will help put our industry sector on the same footing with respect to the agencies that measure and report on the U.S. economy. What it does is it guarantees that sport fishing industry jobs and recreational fishing's economic impact are counted for as part of the GDP. It'll also ensure that the outdoor industry's economic statistics be measured in the same way as other sectors, such as the automobile, pharmaceutical, and agricultural industries. It's been a pilot program for a few months now, and it's estimated 6 million jobs in the outdoor industry. It's impressive.
And we were talking earlier about the importance of this industry to the rural areas, because if you're out away from a city, the biggest resource you have is outdoor sports.
Yep.
And so there are a lot of little businesses in these small corners of the state that depend on this industry.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's one reason Joe and I were talking that, you know, at heart, I grew up when deer hunting was just coming into South Carolina getting big. But the check stations. Think of how many small mom-and-pop gas stations from October to December made 40, 50% of their annual earnings because of deer hunters. I mean, how many hot dogs have you eaten from gas stations?
And there's a lot of pickled stuff out there in jars.
There's a lot of pickled stuff out there. Yeah, to this day. And I mean, I probably have not eaten a hot dog from a gas station like that, except for QT. They got good hot dogs. In probably 10 or 15 years, and it's still a, you know, every time it comes up, my brother, yeah, well, you eat too many of those rot gut hot dogs, you're going to die early. Still haven't died yet, but boy, they were good when they were, let's do this. Let's go to break just a little bit early, because our next guest is Matthew Jimenez from Cylinx. We're going to talk hearing protection, like military-grade hearing protection for the sporting market. So I want to give him a few more minutes. So let's go to break. Be back on the other side with more Woods and Water South Carolina. Welcome back to Woods and Water South Carolina. You know, I got Jim Mize in with me today, and Jim and I were both at the South Carolina Outdoor Press Association conference and at the National Wild Turkey Federation this year in Edgefield. Had a great time.
It was a good one.
It was a good one. And we had some really good speakers come in. We had some good sponsors. One of those was Matthew Jimenez from Cylinx, and Matthew's with us today. Matthew, welcome to Woods and Water South Carolina.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, you know, I got with you right after the conference because it happened that you left one of your Claris Pros there with us, and it was a draw out of the hat, and I ended up with it, and everybody said it was rigged because I was running the thing. It wasn't rigged, I promise you, but I got with you right after, and you kind of dropped the ball, and I appreciate you understanding and appreciate you making time today to be here with us.
Again, anytime.
Well, you got a really great thing, and we're going to talk about it because with the booming shooting sports in high schools all across South Carolina, all across the nation, you guys are, I think, you're positioned great to help those people out. And then for us older guys who have shot all these years with bulky earmuffs, there's something there for us too. But take just a minute and tell us who Cylinx is and what you do with the company.
Yeah, so I'm Senior Vice President of Sales and Marketing, and Cylinx has been around for just over 10 years now. And most of our business, most of our products were all around tactical communications, headsets, and hearing protection for special operations, military, and law enforcement. And did really well there, and so we're, you know, the last couple of years, we did what others have done, is we looked at our products, we looked at our capabilities, we looked at our expertise, we looked at our experience, and realized that this technology that has been, for the most part, focused on the military is something that is equally suited for outdoors and shooting. So we're one of those tactical to practical stories where we're taking this military-grade technology, modifying it slightly so it gets in a little bit closer price points for the average civilian, but for the most part, it's a military technology that we've converted into a civilian application for shooters and hunters around the world.
And the unit you left with us and that I've got, that I've used deer hunting, I've used it shooting, is the Claris Pro. It's really neat when you think about it. It's, you know, lengthwise, it's just over the length of a AAA battery. It's about, what, an inch and a half wide, maybe? And then three-quarter inch deep. It's got a nice little clip that'll fit right on your belt or in your pocket. It's got two earplugs. But they still call them earplugs. What do they call them now? What is that?
Yeah, plug in the... Your Earbuds.
That's it. Earbuds, because they're electronic. And a cable in between. It's really a simple system. It is, man, so much better than either the bulk of headphones, earmuffs, or the little, you know, foam inserts everybody uses when they go shooting. I used it. Yep. I tried it out a little bit, and one of the biggest things I noticed was it comes with small, medium, and large, pads for your ears, I guess. You explained a little better. Yep. But those are very important to get the right sizing for your ears.
Yeah, it really is. Because, again, what we're talking about now is an in-ear versus an over-the-ear hearing protection system. So over-the-ear, of course, everybody's familiar with the Mickey Mouse ears or the earmuffs or whatever you want to call them. And those are essentially one-size-fits-all. It's this foam ring that sits around your ears, and it's attached to a cup, and that cup provides air volume that then attenuates the noise. So very, very simple. Of course, some companies for years have added electronics to it so that you have the ambient sound going in and out so that you can have normal conversations. But that doesn't negate the fact that they're extremely uncomfortable and hot and heavy. And really, essentially, you're really only, even with the electronics, you're really only using them when you're on the line. And then as soon as you get off the line, you have to pull them off. So we've taken all of that into the little earbuds that you were mentioning.
Right.
And took all that electronics that was, on a 1-inch by 1-inch circuit board. We put it into something that was the size of the end of your pinky and encased it in this really ruggedized polymer form. And then, so now you're actually putting, just like you would a standard earplug, you're putting that into your ear canal. And so in order to get the sound attenuation, then like you said, there's a foam tip. We use foam. There's also what they call silicone gel tips, which are flanged, and some people are familiar with that design. I would recommend anybody that uses this to spend a couple extra bucks and go to your local audiologist, and there's other partners we have, EAR Inc., who does custom ear molds, and then you can put those on there. But as far as the foam tip goes, that's really the only fitting required, and it's not many people know how big the ear canal is, so it's a little bit of trial and error. Start with medium, and if that seems a little tight, go down to small, and if it seems a little bit tight, go to small. If it's a little bit loose, then you go up to large. But 80% of Americans are medium.
80%. Well, I'm a medium then. I think at the conference, Pete said he had small eardrums.
It's an odd thing. Oddly enough, people don't know, but Asians generally have large ear canals. So that's a little known factoid that I'll throw out to your audience too.
Now, how do you get that? If you know, how do you get that statistic? Is that just, I mean, where do you get that from? That's a really off the wall piece.
Some audiology manual or database that I looked at years ago when we were toying with this to figure out exactly that. You know, do we just put a medium in there? Should we put all three sizes in there? In the early days of Silinx, we actually had five sizes. We had a large, an extra large, and a super extra large. And unless you're from another planet, you really weren't using. I think a dog might be able to use the extra, extra, extra large, too.
I gotcha. Well, you know, it's hard to put, for me at least, to put into words, you know, blocking the harmful effects of noise. Now, I grew up, you know, listening to loud rock and roll music. I've been shooting shotguns for 30-something years with really no hearing protection. I do use some when I go to the rifle range just because it's so loud. But then again, I don't use it when I get into a box stand, which is really where I need to wear it. But when we talk about those noise levels, we're talking about what kind of decibel range are we talking from the report of a rifle, and then what kind of technology does it take to mash that down to where you really don't hear it? Because that was the really amazing thing. You know, I wore these things in a tree stand, and my goodness, it was almost overwhelming because of and I like the extra high setting. It was almost overwhelming the level of what you were hearing. And squirrels sounded like elephants, you know, cars sounded like they were coming down, you know, the trail behind you. But when we started on the range with my daughter shooting the gun, and I had traditional earmuffs on her, and then I had your system in, and it was amazing because it, you know, I said, whenever you're ready to pull the trigger, and I saw the muzzle jump, but I heard nothing. And it was like there was no interruption of, you know, my conversation with her before or after the shot. So it was really cool. But what comes into play to get a unit to take the muzzle blast of a rifle and just cut it out?
Yeah, so it's obviously a science, obviously acoustics, and we have audiologists for a reason.
Right.
And so really it comes down to attenuating the noise as much as you can. And there's actually a relative limit to it, because after you can plug your ears so much,
okay,
but then at some point the sound continues and can be conducted into your ear canal through your skull. So the key is just be real careful in how much time you're spending in a noisy environment.
Right.
And then obviously, I think we're all smart enough now, or at least our youth now are smart enough, unlike us older guys who, you know, used to tough it out. I don't need no stinking hearing protection, and now, you know, decades later we're suffering for it.
But right.
What's happening technically is you're stuffing something in your ear canal to keep the noise out, and the more you have in there and the deeper you can go, then the more noise you can attenuate. So the rating for that is called an NRR, a noise reduction rating.
Okay.
We're at 25. About the maximum is around 30 to 35, you know, just pure earplugs, you know, straight up earplugs for those hypercritical environments.
Okay.
You start getting up into, you start talking about gunfire and such, and those are in 150 plus dB range. So what we're doing is when we sense anything over 85 decibels electronically, then we compress it, 85 dB being a safe, largely known as a safe level of sound. So anything over 85 dB, then electronically we're compressing it down to a safe level.
And that's all done in a unit that's that small?
It's all done in a unit that's that small.
That's incredible.
And, the thing that I'll add about our particular product, about the Claris Pro, is that there is, as Roger was saying, there is a cable that runs up to it to power them, because they are electronic and they require power. There are others that are out there that don't have that cable, but they're extremely expensive, in the $1,000 range,
okay,
and they also don't have a lanyard or a cable, so if you drop it in the dirt, you're out $500.
And yours you can drop in the dirt. And the mud.
Oh, I don't want to say we encourage it, but go for it. Yeah, but I say if you drop it in the mud, then go ahead and move over to the stream and just wash it off there. Everything we have is, again, military ruggedized, environmentally hardened, waterproof. Take it to the field. And then, of course, there's the smartphone jack on it also.
Right.
So I use mine on the plane to listen to my books and my music, too.
Now, Jim, you've kind of gone in a different direction because of your real job, and maybe there's some openings for it for other people other than shooters, especially the high school people we're trying to get a hold of, but your angle.
Yeah, we're actually in a lot of industrial applications, and what we've been exploring is whether or not you can still see what's going on around you, because you've got to get out of the way of forklifts and that sort of thing, and at the same time, there's loud noise. And so actually been playing around with that application.
Matthew, you think there's some room there for you guys in the industrial area?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jim hit it, because you plug your ears, and yes, you're plugging the noise, but you're plugging everything. So that means if somebody says, look out, the shelf is falling,
yeah,
you may or may not hear it. So that's where the electronics is important, and then something that's affordable is important as well, because obviously it's unrealistic that, you know, every factory worker has a $1,000 set of electronic earbuds. So we're trying to trying to get it down there to encourage others to use it in that environment too. Absolutely.
Well, for the parents, you know, high school shooting sports is just exploding across the country. And I think South Carolina, we had a shoot here the other day, had 500 kids at it. And, you know, you and I were talking at the Scope Convention. You know, you see the earmuffs or you see the foam protectors and, you know, young ears and that 13 to 18 year range. That's when you can do a lot of damage. And I think that's where your product comes in. But we're talking about the Claris Pro. And you've actually got, for anybody listening, I'm going to post it a little bit later on, you've actually got a deal for us until Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm glad you brought up the shotgunning thing, because not only should they be wearing them, but it also, the muffs can interfere with your cheek weld. So
that's right.
These don't interfere with that. So, yes, for everybody, it's a promo code on silingscom.com. And as the writer said, he'll post it, but it's WWFC2016. That's Whiskey Sam Charlie 2016. And that's 25% off any of our Claris Pro products. That's the Claris Pro itself, any accessories. We've got storage kit, cables for connectivity, FRS radios and such. But any of our Claris Pro family, 25% off through December 31st. So treat yourself or your family or your friends to a Christmas present, and that gets it down into a pretty good price range. So we'll hope you take advantage of it.
I hope they will too, because like I said, once you damage your ears, it's done. It's not recoverable. You get hearing aids from there, and are like me, just say a lot, and people have to repeat things. But Matthew, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you even more coming to the Scope Convention this year, making that special trip down. And I look forward to testing this out a little more and working with you some more during the future.
Thanks for having me, Roger. It's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. And again, that's Silinx, the Claris Pro, 25% off, WWSC2016. Hang on through the break. More Woods and Water on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Bringing you back in with a little Huey Lewis in the news. And they're still touring. I still see videos of them up touring. Of course, with that kind of voice, it's scratchy to begin with. You know, it's probably age doesn't affect it too much. But good group. South Carolina. You know, I've lived here my whole life. It's a great state, man. We've got the beach, got the mountains. You can fish for anything from trout to, you know, Gulf Stream species. You do have four seasons out of the year. Go out there this morning, you'll figure out winter's here. With all the things in the outdoors to do, it's also home to some great outdoor writers. And I can name a few. I'll let Jim name a few. But Jim Mize is one of them. I mean, Jim, been in it 40 years. What all magazines have you written for? You were telling me you've written for practically every one of them.
Yeah, I was writing for South Carolina Wildlife for a number of years, so I've been in there. I have been in magazines like Field and Stream. Now I'm doing a lot of fly fishing, humor and nostalgia, so I'm writing for Gray's Sporting Journal, Fly Fisherman, some of those.
And you also got what's Rethink Rural? Tell me a little bit about that one.
Yeah, it's a website that's promoting the enjoyment of rural living. So they have everything from outdoor skills to how to buy land, and they want some humor, nostalgia, just things about enjoying living in rural areas. So it's a good website.
I'm going to pull it up and look at it one of these days. Here it is right here, Rural Life Blog.
Yeah, the story I have on there today is called The Deer Who Wore Camo, and it's about a true hunting story of one of my buddies who hung his deer overnight and decided he needed to wear his raincoat, so we had a hard time finding it. It was a camo coat.
Oh, man. All right, which brings me to a question here, and I'm sure you've written practically every kind of story there is out there. Why fly fishing?
You know, fly fishing is a great subject for a humorist. Trees have teeth. Not a lot of people know that, but if you've ever fly fished, you know that The trees bite more often than the fish. Waders always leak. And, you know, I've always wondered why expensive waders came with patch repair kits. To me, expensive waders should not leak. So it's just a ripe area for that kind of writing.
Well, we were having... I have a hard time keeping a straight face today. Just thinking about some of this stuff. And, you know, he's got two books out here, folks. We'll go ahead and blow this one up. The Winter of Our Discount Tent. And the newest one, A Creek Trickles Through It, which is a playoff of one of the, well, I think of one of the best movies out there, which is A River Runs Through It. But A Creek Trickles Through It. And, you know, just reading the table of contents in the chapter are the story titles. And we're going to get to one of them at the end of the show, which I think you'll find interesting. Bumper stickers for trout bums. Leaky waders. We talked about that one the other day. Signs you don't fish. Signs you fish too little. Why big browns are fat. Fishing with dogs. I mean, I am going to have a hard time keeping a straight face today. You've been in it a long time, but we were talking at lunch the other day about how you got started. And, you know, I'm not a writer. I take way too long to write anything, and I have 8 revisions, and it, you know, but that's just the way, that's the way I'm geared, and I don't know how I ever change. But you were talking about, as far back as high school, your writing classes prepared you for writing articles.
That's right.
And I think it was a great story.
You know, we all have that one teacher that sends us in a little different direction, and I was going to a small country school, and we had one teacher that everybody said, if you're going to college, you have to take this guy's class. And he was a taskmaster. I mean, you worked 5 times as hard for his class as all the others, but he believed if you were going to write well, you had to read well. So I had to read 45 books for one high school class, and he trained us to write an 800-word essay in 45 minutes. And if you ever made a mistake, which you never could write that much without 10 mistakes, he had a book of grammar rules that numbered to 101, and he wouldn't tell you what you did wrong. He would write the number of the rule but on your paper, and you had to go look it up to fix it. And so you were constantly, I wore out that little grammar book. But by the time I got to college, you know, all my writing classes in college were straight A's because I already had a college equivalent of 4 years of English.
Can you name some of those points today?
Oh, the rules?
Yes.
You know, it's funny. I pulled the rule book back out the other day to see how many of them I routinely break, but probably the same ones I was doing wrong in high school.
You still do wrong today?
Still do wrong today.
Some habits are hard to break.
That's it.
We were also talking the other day, and I asked you, you know, over these years, and I guess you've been a member of SIOPA for how long?
Since the late 80s.
And Scope is be 30 years old next year.
Yep. And I joined about 2 years after they formed it.
And you've Excellence in Craft Awards. A bunch.
Yeah, over 60 of them probably.
And when we say Excellence, EIC, Excellence in Craft. See, EIC means something totally different for me. That's earned income credit on the tax world. So when I started getting involved in these and I saw EIC awards, I'm like, what in the world are they talking about?
Yeah.
What is an Excellence in Craft Award for?
They will have categories. So both my books were EIC winners.
Okay.
And they had to compete against other outdoor books. So they were, you know, judged to see which is the best book of the year for the Southeastern Outdoor Press. And it's everything from photography books to how to turkey hunt to humor. So it's a wide range, and they just want to let the better ones rise to the top.
Something I got to work on. I got to gather judges for EIC this year. Talked about your magazine, how many articles you've written, and the wide variety, and you kind of settled on humor. Fly fishing, and we talked about, because I wanted to know, I mean, you got a book here that's got, I don't know how many different stories are in this book.
Oh, probably 40.
And each one of them's a different idea, and I started thinking to myself, you know, I wouldn't have a clue where to start on this one, but you have done something that I probably started 7 or 8 times over my life, and that's a journal. And you're telling me that you've got journals going back to when you were a kid.
That's right. And it probably came from that high school course. We kept journals because you'd come into class and he'd say, okay, open your journal and write something. So you had to have some good thoughts in there, or you'd be starting out the class trying to think of one. And when I started to fish and hunt and write about it, I realized that I would see things when I was out there that would be useful later. And so I would always come down at the end of a fishing trip and write about the trip. And to this day, if I'm fly fishing, I will have a log that records the water temperature, the weather conditions, what the fish were biting, and anything unusual or funny that happened. And there is always some of that. I have caught men's underwear on a fly rod. You know, some people catch shoes. I catch men's underwear. So that's how it comes about. But I've got these that go back to the 70s.
And there's a humor story in catching a men's underwear. I mean, you could go on for pages with how those underwear ended up in a river.
Well, it's funny because I just wrote that story, but I caught them 2 years ago. And so I was going back through my log. I said, I've got to do this one. And so it'll be on that website at some point.
Oh, gosh. I'm serious. Between my brother and I, we've talked about this before here when he was here on the show one day, is we've probably got 20 or 25 journals at various points through our life that may have from 5 pages to 20 pages and then stop. And 2 years later, we buy another journal and start again. But that just takes discipline.
Yeah, one of the stories I wrote last year for Gray's Sporting Journal was about a duck season in the 1970s. It was just a remarkable duck season. And I did, you know, a magazine article on some of the things that happened. And without that journal, who can remember 40 years ago?
Yeah. Do you think a lot of people try to replace a journal like that with pictures these days? Because, you know, back then you had roll of 12, roll of 24. You had to get it developed. Today, I think a lot of people try to replace that with just pictures because you can take, I don't know, in a given time period, you take 1,000 pictures and think you've recorded it.
You know, if for the serious fisherman, I would really say keep a log, because the thing that we all learn is that if you go fishing today and something works, a year from now, it's going to work again. And so I think some people do, you know, pictures are great for trophies.
Right.
But they're not as good for actual use in the field.
Oh, me. Yeah. I'm not much of a trout fisherman. I like to go. Where's your favorite trout place? You got a favorite stream?
I like fishing in the Pisgah Forest. I'm not going to tell everybody where my stream is, but, you know, I like going up around Pisgah. There's some good streams here in western South Carolina. I like the Chattooga River a lot. But, you know, I like getting up in the mountains and hiking a ways and getting off the beaten path some.
All right. Well, let's it's about as good as any place to take a break. Come back with more on the other side of Woods and Water. We got a few more ideas to finish up. And I asked Jim to bring a couple books. I've got a couple. And, you know, books for Christmas are great presents. So hang on through the break. We'll be back on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water South Con. We've got Jim Mize in the studio with us. Jim's been a writer since the 70s and has gotten to be a good friend of mine through our press association comings and goings. And he's got a couple of books out there. He's been good enough to bring a couple of books in. So for Christmas we have...
You'll shoot your eye out, kid. Merry Christmas.
We've got two of his books, A Creek Trickles Through It, 877-235-9405, 877-235-9405. I'll get these books to you. Caller one gets one, caller two gets the second one. So call in now and get you a good stocking stuffer with some great humorous fly fishing stories. Well, Jim, let's talk about your books. We've got the winner of our discount tent. Tell me about that one.
That's a general outdoor book, and it's published by the University of South Carolina Press. It covers everything from carp to kudzu. It's a hunting, fishing, nature, humor book.
I think the lines are broken out there today. Let me try this again. If you would like a copy of Jim Mize's book, A Creek Trickles Through It, you can call 877-235-9405. And I got two copies of it, so caller number one gets one of them, caller number two gets the other one. I forget there's a delay, and some people might not have heard it. So this is a winner of our discount tent, Humorous Look at Flora, Fauna, and Foolishness Outdoors. When did you write this one?
That one's probably from the mid-90s. I was doing a lot of work in South Carolina Wildlife at the time, and the University Press noticed it and asked me to do a book. And so it came together that way. I really like the illustrator. I was able to work with a guy named Cliff Shelby to illustrate the book. And some of you may remember the Hal and Charlie cartoons from the old Bass magazine, and that was Cliff Shelby's work. So it's a well-illustrated book, humorous cover.
It is.
Looks a little too much like me.
Yeah, he does do a pretty good likeness of you.
Yeah.
If you ever look up a picture of Jim and look at the copy of this book, you'll see what I'm talking about. Night of the Possum, you know, Camping with Kids, that's got to be a pretty good one. I haven't read this one yet. I might have to get this one, too. Getting the Jump on Squirrels, The Jackalope Hunt. Humor. Why humor?
You know, I like the creativity of humor. Good humor typically has a couple of things. One is a nugget of truth, and the other is a surprise. And so if you think about jokes, and if you know what the punchline's going to be, it's not that funny. But if you misdirect the train of thought a little bit and surprise somebody, you know, you'll get a chuckle. And so I enjoy writing that kind of thing.
Your next book, A Creek Trickles Through It. Now, this is fly fishing humor only.
That's right.
And this, if you're a fly fisherman, this is where it really gets home, because you can insert yourself into any of these titles.
And there's some nostalgia in there. There's a few stories. You know, one of the stories in there I like a lot that was from years ago is my dad was a World War II vet, and we used to night fish, and he would tell me stories from the war. And so there's a story in there about the tales he would tell that's history lessons by lantern light. And, you know, you feel like you need to record those somewhere, and so I put some of those in the book just to entertain. Some of those stories are pretty funny as well, and some of them, you know, they'll pull at the heartstrings a little bit sometimes.
And that's the making of a good book. When it can get you involved emotionally, it's a good book.
You know, we kind of joke that if you're not making your readers laugh or cry, you're not doing your job.
Very true. Bumper stickers for trout, fishermen. That was one of the ones that I started off with. You couldn't have put it in here any better. And there's another one in here. We're going to get to at the end of the show. If you've listened to this for any length of time, you know I like to go out with a Chuck Norris joke. So there's a chapter in here called If Chuck Norris Fly Fished, which is, you know, and these are all originals.
You know, Chuck Norris was on the campaign trail with Huckabee years ago, and it gave his jokes a second life. And at those kind of press conferences and things, the press would be making up Chuck Norris jokes. So there was some new material there.
I'm going to close out with a couple of these. You'll like them. You really will. Well, books. You know, I've often been told what you read, nobody can ever take away from you. Whether it's something you remember or not here today, you might remember down the road. What, and we talked about, you know, if you're not laughing or crying, you're not doing your job as a writer. What other kind of books do you like? Who do you think is a real good writer?
You know, in the outdoor field, there were two humorists that I always thought were funny for different reasons. And I grew up with Ed Zern, who wrote the back page of Field and Stream. Right. Exit Laughing was his column.
Yep.
And Ed was as good with a phrase as any humorist I've ever read. And, you know, we were talking earlier about a story he wrote one time about bales of marijuana washing up on a beach, the seagulls eating all the marijuana, and the last line in the story was, "and it left no turn unstoned." And he would use a phrase that you knew well, change a couple of words, and suddenly you're caught off guard. And that's great humor. The other one that I really like a lot is Pat McManus. And what a lot of people know of Pat McManus, what Pat does really well is characters. And the people in his stories will make you laugh just doing common things. But what Pat did with his characters is he would take a stereotype of a character, and in their story, they would be just the opposite of what you expect. So his Indian tracker that was their guide had poor eyesight and couldn't see. And so, you know, that's the sort of thing he would write and create complicated situations for them. But between the two of them, they were good examples.
And you say Pat's writing mysteries now, or
that's the interesting thing is that after he stopped writing his humor column for Outdoor Life, he started writing humorous mysteries and same characters, same methods, but his mysteries are funny. They're great characters and they're still mysteries. The first one was called The Blight Way. Bo Tully is the sheriff, and you'll find the same characters in a lot of the books, but they're always comical and still you've got the mystery to solve.
Who else did you bring in?
Brought in one of our Scope members and SIOPA friends is a guy named Jim Cassidy, and I thought it was a good book to bring in because of all the fire and everything up in the Smokies. Jim did a book just a couple of years ago called Fly Fishing in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. And it's a fishing guide. But what's really unique about it is the history and color Jim brings to the book. He grew up in that area, and he was a history professor by trade. So he typically watch for those kinds of things. And so he would add a lot of color about the area when he would tell you how to fish and how to get there.
Dave signaled me something. Do we have a caller, Dave? No. Okay. We don't have a caller. Jim, was he from Bryson City?
He grew up near there.
Okay. Because I know at SIOPA in 14 at Fontana.
That's right.
Which was, he was there and did a presentation on that book.
That's right. He and his brother hiked all over the mountains. He fished with his dad and grandfather a lot. So he has a lot of time on the ground in those places where they've been fighting fires.
Yeah, he does. It was, and man, he put in some time up in those woods.
He did. And he's still, I think, even last year, he was still backpacking in and fishing those trout streams.
Have you ever been on one of his trips with him?
I haven't been on one of those trips with him. I've fished with him.
Yeah. We shot Sporting Clays down at Edgefield, and I shot with him, and just, he beat me.
Oh, yeah. He's a good shot.
He bit me. I was not expecting to get beat by Jim Cassidy, but he did. I think we were pretty close through, like, the first six stations. And after that, it got really tough. And I know Jim, and in some of the stations we would miss, you know, he'd say, "That's made for a shooter," because I've never seen a quail come right at you like that.
Yeah, yeah. No, you know, you're talking about the quality of writing in the state, and Jim's a South Carolina writer, and always, you know, one of the best in the EIC competitions, always has some real emotional or nostalgic stories, and has written probably 4,000 magazine articles.
Amazing. Taught at Winthrop for years.
I think he's either written or edited over 30 books, so...
And I've got five of them. Actually,
right.
A couple of those are duplicates.
Okay.
I actually had a couple of those, but when he offered that five-book package, man, that was just too good to pass up.
And his passion is turkey hunting and fly fishing. So when he's writing about those two things, he's outstanding.
Well, I really appreciate you coming in today.
Glad to.
We got a couple of winners for your books, and I'll get those to those people. Didn't do a whole lot of Christmas giveaways this week. I'll make up for it next week. I promise you guys a good Christmas on Woods and Water, South Carolina. I'll get it to you. But I wanted to close out, Jim. One of your chapters in the book is If Chuck Norris Fly Fished. All right, Dave, grab your seat. I don't want you falling out as we end the show today. Okay. For example. Can't read that one. the knots in Chuck's leaders would never go away. That's because he'd seal his blood knots with real blood. When Chuck fished, every fish would spook. Still, they would bite if he told them to. I'm not sure what fish would be his favorite, but I can tell you wouldn't bother with weak fish. Where's the one? There's one in here about, I'm not going to make it. None of his tackle would dare malfunction. If his waders leaked, it would be because they wet themselves. Miss a strike, not Chuck. If his hook didn't get them, his roundhouse kick would. If Chuck tied flies, it would be with their hands behind their backs. Good books for Christmas. Jim Eyes, you can look him up. CreekTricklesThroughIt.com?
Yep.
Hey, as always, thanks for tuning in. Make time to get outdoors in South Carolina this year. Take a back road when you can. It's always more productive and fun than an interstate. Don't forget that camera. I'll see you here next week on More Woods and Water, South Carolina.